listening to The Realist Report. And now your host, John Frantz.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. The website is therealistreport.com, where you can find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other broadcasts I've appeared on. And with that said, let me go ahead and introduce my special guest this evening. Carolyn Yeager is joining us for the very first time. I have followed Carolyn's work for several years, and it has profoundly influenced my own personal views about Adolf Hitler, National Socialism, the fake Holocaust narrative, and World War II more generally, and all sorts of other related topics which we will be discussing at length tonight. So welcome, Carolyn. Thank you so much for joining me. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, John.
Yeah. This is great. I'm glad that this worked out. I was, a little bit concerned you would reject my offer to come on the radio program, so I'm really glad that you agreed to join me tonight. This is a conversation long overdue, I think.
I was very pleased when you contacted me, and I'm glad to be here.
Very good, yeah. And you did do a lot of radio programs, a lot of writing. You've kind of slowed down recently, but really quick before we came up with a little outline, or I should say you pretty much came up with the outline, but it's all topics that I was planning on discussing anyways. So we will kind of go off the outline here in a few minutes, but just to get started, I just had a couple initial topics to bring up before we get into that. And the first one is, kind of just a basic question I ask all my guests. How the heck did you get involved in all of this originally? It's always an interesting story, you know, how people get involved in revisionism and, you know, racial realism and all these other topics that we're going to be discussing. So what was your path?
It is interesting. I always find everybody's story very interesting. My own, it really happened because of the internet. When I got on the internet, and I was rather slow to do so, I had a kind of a prejudice against it, or I thought, who needs that? And I don't want email. I just thought of it as email, you know, and, I get enough mail. I don't want to get a bunch of mail from people. And you know, I was negative about it, but so I would say, it was in 1999 that I got my first computer. I was thinking I'm going to, get into, environmental. I'm going to get into a cause. I wanted to be part of a cause. And I think I'm going to get into environmentalism because I'd always thought that was important. But as I got into it, I found things that, you know, that I didn't seem to care about. And I ended up getting into this. And I started with 9/11, as so many people did, and got, you know, found my way onto various little forums and places. And I will say I remember when I got on this forum. I was reading it for a while, and then I started writing some things. I got on a page or a topic about National Socialism, and this guy was writing about positive things about National Socialism. And I got so excited. I was so thrilled. I guess I knew I was kind of sympathetic, but I can't really say how much I knew about it at the time. I wasn't a complete stranger, but it just rang a note with me. I read everything that this guy was saying and a few other people were saying. Some of them were, you know, being critical and some were not. And, I thought, this is amazing. This is wonderful. And I realized that, that was something that I was extremely interested in. And I don't know where exactly I went from there, but I continued looking into that. And I also remember a time, very much when I was, a teenager and at home, this would be in the 1950s, and Look magazine came. We subscribed to Life and Look and a few other magazines, and there was this big story about Adolf Hitler. I would have been maybe, I'll just say 15 or 16, and there was a picture of him looking, those terrible pictures that they put all the time of him. And it was a story about how he mesmerized the German people. And they showed us some German people at one of these nighttime rallies looking up, like they were mesmerized, you know, by what he was saying. They were just very much taken in, you know, very much interested in it. But, you know, the whole story was like that. And knowing that, my family was German, had a lot of, real German relatives and grandparents and stuff. So I remember asking my mother, why the Germans liked Hitler, because I thought that he was creepy, you know, at that time. I mean, he seemed really creepy, and I couldn't understand it, why they would like him. And she gave me an answer that was pretty good. It wasn't necessarily anti-Hitler. But then I just, that was it. I forgot about it. But I remember how interested I was then, and it always bothered me that Germans were looked badly upon because of Nazism. And I didn't, I always felt uncomfortable when I came across that kind of a story.
Now, is your family on both sides, or both sides German?
Yes,
yeah, okay.
Yes. So anyway, I think about that now, you know, how that struck me at an early age. And then later when I always wanted to hear good things about Germans. And when I heard that guy talking about National Socialism on that forum, I was just all excited. And I always continued and still do get all turned on and excited when I read about National Socialism and the Third Reich.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Do you remember what forum it was off the top of your head?
No, it was something that probably doesn't exist anymore.
Okay. Okay. Well, one other question, sort of related question. So since you became so interested in this topic, and it was similar to me, I mean, as soon as I got into revisionism and Hitler, I really couldn't get enough of it. I mean, I'm still very interested in the subject, but I just don't really have as much time to dedicate to, you know, reading as much as I used to. I mean, I've read a number of books. I have a pretty substantial library of books and stuff. So I've obviously read a lot more than I think your average person, but I am still just totally fascinated by it. I think it's a very interesting topic, a topic that obviously we've been lied to about majorly, and it's had very negative repercussions for our country, for our race. So since you got into revisionism and you had mentioned 9/11, I'm curious, what thinkers or scholars have been most influential on you? Like, what websites maybe did you rely on for information when you were kind of learning, or who have you learned the most from, I guess?
Oh gosh, I don't know if I can, even bring that back into my mind. I have a little bit of short-term memory, problems, you know, so things like that is like, well, what was that? Well, of course, the revisionists Ernst Zundel and, Germar Rudolph, and I don't know how to answer that, truthfully. Maybe something will come to me.
Okay.
As we go along.
No problem at all. Well, one topic I want to address right off the bat is 9/11, because as I believe you are aware, we've discussed, and I'm sure you've seen my website, 9/11 was my big wake-up call, and that's how I got into all this stuff. I was just so outraged that we could be lied to about this. And it, I mean, I was very, even before I was into 9/11 truth, I was very much against all the wars we were fighting in the Middle East. I saw them as totally illegitimate, totally corrupt, totally based on lies, which was, I mean, like a well-established fact. It certainly is now. This is, you know, not even controversial anymore. Back then it was, oh, you know, you're anti-government, you're anti-Bush, you're anti-American if you're criticizing the wars. But now it's just everybody knows, yeah, they were based on lies, and, you know, it's really easy to demonstrate that. It's, you know, a well-known fact, and we can prove who was behind it. Jews admit it. You know, we could go on and on about it. So I was just so outraged by it, and I thought, you know, if we were lied to about 9/11, what else have we been lied to about? And it turns out pretty much everything. So what are your thoughts on 9/11 in a nutshell? How deeply did you get into this topic?
Well, I did. I used to spend every evening, you know, then once I got more familiar with the internet and so on, I used to spend every evening looking at everything, and one thing would link to another, and I was reading it all. And I found it so amazing, how they debunked all these stories that I had been believing, you know, after 9/11, they had some kind of a memorial, some kind of service, somewhere outdoors, and everybody was speaking, and, you know, it was very, very sentimental, and flags and everything. And very rarely, during my whole lifetime, do I ever get real, patriotic feeling, you know, or anything like that. But I did at this time. At this occasion, I have a few other occasions, but, and I remember just thinking, yes, we need to do something about this. And I remember that when, Hussein was, they were talking about Hussein's sons. I believe that absolutely, that his sons were going around just murdering people right and left if they felt like it and throwing people in prison. And I remember telling my mother, well, that just, she was skeptical about going to war like you. I remember telling her, well, you just can't let people do things like that. You know, that's horrible. So I was going along with it. And then, took a couple of years and a fellow came around who I got to know, and he, you know, just as a, in a certain, I don't know, in a certain circle, I was in this discussion group, local, not internet, but in real life. And he showed up there a few times, and he was handing out these videos, and he had a whole bunch of 9/11 videos. He used to record them and then give them away to people. So I was the only one there who was willing to take them. I took whatever he was giving me, and the others said, no, they didn't want it. You know, they didn't want to hear anything like to question 9/11. And I thought that was pretty awful. And, so I watched them. The first one I watched with a friend of mine, we were both totally impressed by it, and it was just like amazing. We're talking, wow, this is something else again. It was in plain sight. That's the one. That's the first one I watched. And then her husband walked in the room, and we were telling him he needs to watch it, and he got really mad and told her it was a bunch of hooey and it wasn't true, and she was, she didn't want to watch any more of them after that. So.
Wow. You know, that's, it's what's, yeah, it's what's so sad is people literally are so weak, and it's men, it's women, it's young, it's old, it's, you know, it's just our society in general. So many people, most people are just so weak and pathetic, they literally can't even entertain these controversial ideas.
I know.
And I think a big part of that is all of this emotional propaganda that the Jews, you know, pour out of their media outlets and out of their, you know, the government with all these memorials and, you know, the traumatic images that are associated with 9/11 and other events like the Holocaust.
Well, these people were all very much lefties, Democrats. And, okay. I was always a Democrat most of my life, but I had already changed by then, but I was changing, you know, from that, around that time. And, they don't want to, they want to hate Hitler. They don't want anything that's going to say things in history didn't happen the way they're said to happen. They don't want to change any of that because they like the way the history that we have, the fake history that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's really what it is. And I always, I'm a firm believer that you can't convince people, because of the evidence. It's a political position that people take, and we have to have political power, which is why I was so thrilled and happy, and I still am, but I'm a little concerned about Donald Trump. But it's the people who have the political power. You know, when Adolf Hitler got political power, then he did all this stuff. But until then, he couldn't. No convincing was going to change people enough. It's not going to do it. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing with the Holocaust. You know, we've got, it's so clear, what's wrong with the story, but people don't want to listen to it. They won't listen to it. Just like these people who wouldn't take the videos home.
Right. And I have to say, in my personal experience, people are much more triggered when you bring up, you know, revisionist arguments, when you start offering a positive perspective of Hitler and, you know, getting into, you know, really the truth about World War II and what it was all about. Boy, people just cannot handle the Holocaust stuff. 9/11 is still controversial and you'll get some negative reactions, but the Holocaust and Hitler. Yeah. I mean, my gosh, people are just so, so indoctrinated with this narrative. And it's like you're waging an, like, intellectual violence against them when you bring up these topics, and they just cannot handle it.
Yeah. And to them, they were our enemy in the war. They were right. our enemy, and we can't change that around, because then everything, the whole history is going to change. And that's really what threatens them. And you see why you weren't threatened, I don't know. I have my background, you know, that I was saying that I always wanted to hear something good about Adolf Hitler and the Germans. But you were very open to 9/11. You had also already, you'd say you had gotten, unhappy with the wars. So, some people are, I was always, open to things like, you know, I was never one of those closed-minded people.
Right.
But
I think in my case, I truly am just a very, like, intellectually honest person, and I just go with where the evidence and reason lie. I mean, I'm open mm-hmm. to different ideas about any topic. I mean, and I've talked about many alternative topics on this right. podcast, and I'm interested in many others that I haven't talked about. I think this whole flat earth thing is interesting and maybe worth discussing. I don't know much about it, but, you know, I know a lot of people are kind of into that now, and I think it's worth, you know, if people are interested in it, why not talk about it? I'm interested in all topics and hearing alternative
too,
perspectives. Yeah.
John, and, because somebody, sent me a link to this YouTube video, so I went ahead and started to watch it, and I found it so interesting. I watched the whole thing. It's I don't know the name of it, but it's that one with, what's her name? From Renegade. I can't, what's her
name?
Sinead,
yeah.
Yes, Sinead, and this guy who is one of the key people who knows and really understands the flat earth theory. And as I'm watching what was put together there, I said, gosh, this is pretty convincing.
I
realized that, you know, a lot of things can appear to be convincing, but I don't know enough to know whether it wouldn't be, and I don't want to associate myself with it at this point, because it does have a lunacy kind of quality
right.
to it.
Right.
And so many people are angry about it. People in our movement are angry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not angry about it, but I sort of agree with you. I don't know enough about it. I haven't dedicated the time to really get into it. But my point is that I'm just open to all sorts of ideas. Certainly now, I mean, especially since I started really getting into 9/11 and all these other topics, I realize we've been profoundly lied to about the mm-hmm. biggest events, the most paradigm-forming events and narratives of our existence on Earth. So, I mean, why not question everything? And that's really all I'm trying to say, whether it's the flat earth or any other topic. And it kind of seems like you're that way too, which is really cool to hear. One question I have for you, and this is kind of getting into a lot of the main topics we're going to be discussing, just to start off on this. What are the most important points you would make to someone about World War II, about Hitler, about the Holocaust? What do people need to know? What is an accurate narrative that you could demonstrate and prove if somebody sat down and were open-minded like we were? Said, okay, Carolyn, you know, I don't know anything about this revisionist stuff. I don't really know what's up with Hitler other than what I've been told in school. And, you know, he seems like this evil man who wanted to murder all these people, and he did that. Tell me your story. What's a more accurate narrative? What points would you make?
Oh, wow. You're giving me a test here. I would start out with talking about his history, his past, and you have to go back to the entire German experience, say from the 1890s on. You have to talk about the influence of the Jews in Germany, and then World War One. There's lots there, you know. The Versailles Treaty, and Hitler's, experience as a soldier in the war, and his good reports, and what a upright person he was, and what a patriot he was, and how crushed he was when Germany was convinced to go ahead and surrender, and then they got screwed the way they did. And he couldn't accept that, couldn't live with that, and he decided he would become a politician. And he had the will and the discipline and the love for his country to stick it out through all those early years and work so hard. And he also had this inspired vision where he believed that he could do it. He believed in it, or he believed that you should believe in what you want to do. I don't know. It was a kind of a positive thinking thing, but he almost viewed
it as his destiny, like he was meant to do all this. Yeah.
Yeah, he took it that this is what he was going to do, and he didn't falter no matter how difficult it was. And then he brought Germany to he saved Germany in basically, and the German people loved him. So all these stories about how they were subjugated to him and blah, 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 all that, none of that is true. And you can't, you know, if you ask for evidence, here's where we get into the nitty gritty. You say, where's your evidence? They don't provide any, and they don't, they talk around it and use the whole kind of thing. The way I wrote about Alan Dershowitz in my latest post on my site, you know, how he explains, what is fake news, Holocaust denial is fake news. How he does that, he doesn't say anything that, he doesn't prove anything. He doesn't have any evidence whatsoever, but he just keeps repeating it, and, you know, having the media on your side, and that's where you come in with so much Jewish influence, and then the victorious countries in both wars want to keep this myth alive, and so they, you know, that's how it's done. And as I say again, it's political power that has to change, because you can tell the truth all you want, but people aren't, they won't listen if they're convinced that the story is otherwise.
Right.
And now this fake news, you know, the fake news story thing can work for us, but they're trying to make it work for them, which is what bothered me. I wanted to write a comment on this essay by Alan Dershowitz, because he's trying to say that, oh yeah, fake news has been around for a long time. Holocaust denials when it started. And they want to take our arguments and turn them around and use them themselves against us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's always name calling. It's never actually engaging with revisionist arguments or acknowledging them or, you know, dealing serious with them at all. It's just, you're a Nazi, you're an anti-Semite, you're a racist, you know, et cetera. And with like average people, what I've discovered, cause I mean, people that know me in real life, I mean, it comes up at some point. I mean, I either bring it up or I make a comment or they find my website or whatever. They find my, you know, I, it's not like I'm keeping this a secret really. And, you know, one thing that I've noticed is that people, they've been so traumatized and so, exploited. I think that's a good word for it. They've been so exploited by all of this Holocaust propaganda, especially the Hollywood movies and all of these images of these dead bodies, which are never put into context. It's never explained what was going on in this scene. It's just that, you know, they see all these dead bodies being bulldozed, for example, or they see all these, you know, emaciated prisoners, and they just tie it to Hitler and the evil Nazis. And they see these, you know, newsreels of Hitler giving a speech, and he's just, you know, speaking in German like he does. And it's manipulated to make it seem scary and everything else. So that's really what it is. People really don't know anything about World War II. If you ask them any details, they just know Hitler was evil and 6 million Jews were, you know, murdered in gas chambers. They don't really know any of the details. They couldn't really explain why they believe this. They've just seen the photographs. They've heard some quote unquote Holocaust survivor come to their local, you know, public library or go to one of their children's sixth grade classes and sell all these vulnerable children a bunch of nonsense propaganda and sell them their memoirs. I mean, these people go in there and they sell their books to all these kids. They have like a captured market, and they'll make a grand, you know, each week they'll go to a different school and make like $1,000. It's such a scam. It's so outrageous. Oh my gosh, Carolyn, it makes me so mad. Just talking about this even, it's so outrageous. But that's what it is. In my opinion, I'd like to know your comments on that. Like the emotional and traumatic imagery associated with the fake Holocaust story and how exploitative it is.
Okay, first I want to say, you know, you asked me about the books earlier, the books or who influenced me. There was somebody that I met on the internet, and his name was Martin. And we got together on some forum that we were both on, and then another guy joined us, and he pointed out that the fellow who owned it that I was, you know, enjoying, was a Jew and was, not to be trusted, and it all started to, you know, make sense. Anyway, we became good friends, and then he gave me this book list. Not that I was already very sympathetic, you know, and interested in Hitler and so on, but I read through a number of books, and what was that? The first one I read, in like this, you know, to get educated about all this was The Nameless War. You know that one?
Archibald Ramsey, I think, is the author.
Yeah, Ramsey. Yeah. Ramsey. Yeah. Because my memory's really bad about this, but I couldn't think of the name, but I just now did. The Nameless War. And then after that, there was that book, a very long book, like, I don't know, almost 1,000 pages, it seems like, by a British, a reporter for the London Times or whatever during the war and all that. Douglas Reed. Good for you. You see? Yeah, I read his book. What's the name of it?
He wrote a number of books. Controversy of Zion was a big one.
Controversy of Zion. That's the one I read, yes. And then I read some others. And I also read Mein Kampf, which I was very excited to read. And, that got me going, you know. I mean, got me educated, I guess. I had a whole slew of books I read. And then I was following things on the internet. And so... that's how that worked. Well, about the, you asked about the terrible scam. Was that what it was?
I wanted to get your take specifically on all of the Holocaust propaganda and the Holocaust imagery that is used to perpetuate this fake story and to, I really do view it as a form of psychological warfare that's being waged against us when they're telling us these horror stories and using these really traumatic images to just attack people psychologically and emotionally. That's what this is. The Jews know how to use the media to attack us and to exploit us. And I think that's, and the Holocaust story really is the epitome of this.
Right. It's, you know, on Elie Wiesel Kahn's World, a website of mine, I have started writing because I ran out of things to write about Elie Wiesel, and he wasn't doing much either or saying much. So I started writing about some of these, writers of these novels, these survivors who've written these novels that they call memoirs and so on of their experience in the Holocaust and, in the Auschwitz. They usually want to be in Auschwitz, but this might be in some other camps too. And exposing just what's in these books, just none of it makes any sense, and none of it can be, you know, it doesn't hold together at all. And some of it's just so outrageous. So that's one example. One thing I've tried to do to get that across, because it makes, like you, it makes me mad, makes me so angry. What these people are doing. But there's a certain number of people who will read this and care and, you know, agree with you and me, but they most don't. And, you know, then I get these nasty comments. Most of them I don't publish, but, you know, I get comments from Jews, not often, but often enough, telling me how terrible I am and how stupid I am, and I should learn something and read something and blah, blah. So they're all over the internet too, these people. Once again, I just, how that works. Well, I realize that people are manipulated by it. And I know that I used to see it. I accepted it. I thought, well, it must be, you know, I didn't question it all through my life, but I didn't pay much attention to it either. And it wasn't a big part of my life at all until I, got interested in, I got interested in Hitler and, the Third Reich. And then I knew we had to take on the Holocaust. And so, you know, I got into that too. And I'm really sick. I'm sick of the Holocaust that I have to keep writing about it, but it's a thing that's out in front all the time.
Always, you know? Always. I know. I feel the same way. I'm like, geez, yeah. And it's almost like I feel compelled to write about it or talk about it because the Jews are always bringing it up. It's always about the Holocaust. Whether it's, in my opinion, I mean, we can get into this a little bit in some more detail as we proceed here, but I've argued that the fake Holocaust narrative is like the linchpin behind the whole white genocide agenda. I mean, it served Jewish interests so well. I mean, Jews really unite behind the Holocaust. It's like one of the main things that Jews identify with, and there's public opinion polls that demonstrate this. So it serves as this uniting force for Jewry, and Jews are already very, very united and, you know, cohesive, organized entity, certainly in America, but really all over the world. So it serves to strengthen their identity and to advance their interests, while at the same time totally delegitimizing any form of white identity, of just having a healthy white racial identity. I mean, it is. And it always goes back to the Holocaust. So in order for white people to ever be free and to gain control of their countries and nations again, there is absolutely no way we could avoid talking about the Holocaust and Hitler and World War II. It is fundamental.
Well, I've been saying that all along, and I'm glad you're one of the people who also thinks that way. A lot of people in white identity don't think it's important, as you know, and think we can just ignore it and leave it alone, and because it just doesn't matter to us. So, but lately I've come to think about it this way, that they're really pushing anti-Semitism, and they've always, even before the Holocaust, they were pushing anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism is the thing that they can't tolerate, because they can't tolerate criticism of Jews and as a people. They can't tolerate the exposure of the way they behave and things they do. They call it anti-Semitism, and or they can't tolerate not having full rights and being able to be influential and so on in every country in the world, and you know, have everything everyone else has. They can't tolerate nations saying, well, we don't really want you, or we don't want you to have all the rights that the rest of us have. Oh, they can't tolerate that. So that's all anti-Semitism comes under that heading. And they say very clearly that anti-Semitism, once we had World War II, then it became, well, anti-Semitism results in the Holocaust. And that's why it's so terrible now. And a lot of people have bought into that, oh, if you hate if you don't like the Jews, or if you feel, it doesn't really talk about hate. I mean, anti is not necessarily hate, but, if you restrict Jews in any way, you're going to bring on another Holocaust. And that's what we can't do. And that's why they play it up so much, because it is the scary thing. And they can say, anti-Semitism leads to this, which they do say all the time.
Right,
which is
right.
Nonsense.
Well, and it's not only anti-Semitism, it's also, you know, any basic white nationalist idea. Even if it's like a Trump-like sort of civic nationalist idea.
Every white nationalist is an anti-Semite.
Right.
They call Trump an anti-Semite.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's so ridiculous. I mean, you know, I really try to be objective and professional, you know, certainly when I write and also when I do these podcast programs. But Carolyn, I'll tell you what, I'm at a point now where, I mean, I just really kind of do hate the Jews. Like, I'm so sick of these people. And I mean, it's not like every single individual Jew. It's just like the way they operate as as an organized entity. The ADL, I mean, oh my gosh, you know, we can go on. There's literally thousands of organized Jewish groups all colluding together, all conspiring together, all openly, in many cases, they're just openly doing this. I mean, you can read their press releases and read their newspapers, and they'll tell you exactly what they're doing and how they're framing anti-Semitism, for example, how they're framing, you know, all these anti-white policies and all these anti-white narratives. And they'll just admit it. And then if you point it out, if you're critical of it, if you try to expose it, you're an evil racist Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. The whole thing is just such an affront to me as a thinking individual and just so unacceptable that, that's really what drives me is this is just so wrong. And it's so obviously wrong what these people are doing. Yeah. It's so easy to demonstrate all this.
You see it. And when you don't let yourself see it or you resist seeing it, then you don't see it. So, you know, this again comes to, it has to be a decision. And somebody has to lead that. We have to free up our society, because if we don't free up our society as to free thinking and so on, and they're trying to close that down, that's just how bad they are. I hate them too. And I feel the same way. I don't hate every Jew. There's actually this Jewish woman was in my family. I didn't know she was Jewish until really, I was really late, you know, less. And, she died now, but she was a very nice lady. She was very nice, but she did have some Jewish traits, which I could see once I learned she was Jewish. But I always liked her and I never knew she was Jewish because she was, you know, she had those traits like bragging about her kids and wanting her kids all to go to the best schools and achieve and so on. But she did a lot. She did a lot for her family and for everybody else in the family. She was a good relative, you know, as far as a family member. And she wasn't, she didn't care about Jewish. She wasn't religious or anything. She was, they were both,
left-wingers. She didn't have like a real strong, like, ethnic Jewish identity.
No, she didn't have any. She wanted to marry my mother's cousin, and she, and she was German, a German Jew, very accent and everything, very German-like. And, she set set out to get him, and she didn't. She was a very good wife to him and all that. I don't know why I'm talking about her, but, I always can think about her when I think,
Jews. Yeah, yeah.
She meant well.
Well,
hurt anybody.
Here's the thing about Jews. I'm not mad at Jews for being racist, for being, you know, ethnocentric. I support everyone being able to do that. You know, I'm not mad at the Jews for having a Jewish state of Israel. I'm not mad that they want to, you know, send their kids to the best schools, you know, network with the top CEOs and advance, you know, their families and their sons and daughters and their community. Good for them. They should be doing that. That's what any healthy, racial group of people should be doing. What I'm upset about is that they deny that same right to us. And they use all these fake stories, these fake narratives, especially the Holocaust narrative, to justify it and to demonize us and to, you know, engage in this war against, this open war against us. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if, you know, I guess my point is that I understand why Jews do act, you know, ethnocentric and act collectively, which is fine and good. That's what any, you know, normal group of people should be doing. It's the fact that they prevent us from doing so. And hysterically they're hysterically anti-white. And it's just,
it's
outrageous.
They're taught that it threatens them. Because,
That's right.
Because they don't question it. They all believe the Holocaust. They believe the World War II narrative and all. So why wouldn't they? You know, they believe all that. And it's convenient for them to believe it, so they don't question it.
It's convenient. It's very beneficial financially. Mm-hmm. I mean, politically, socially. I mean, we could go on. This narrative certainly benefits Jews as individuals and most certainly as a collective group of people. Look how much money we give all these Holocaust museums. Holocaust museums, Jewish groups. I mean, there's literally, and we'll probably get into this when we start talking about these fake anti-Semitic bomb threats here in a minute. All these Jewish organizations lobby the federal government for millions of dollars every year in a special grant that's like specifically designed for Jews. It's like that Homeland Security grant. And the federal, mm-hmm. the feds are giving these people millions of dollars. All these
and
Jewish groups.
And you know who does? Because Congress votes it for them.
Right. I mean, that's what I mean.
But Congress.
This whole idea.
These are Congress people, and the Republicans, of course, are the worst. Every one of them is just Israel. Absolute lover, bow down. I think Israel is the greatest thing in the world, and American Jews are great, and we have to support all these Jews. And I always hate it when Trump talks that way, but he wouldn't do all this. Trump himself would not be handing out all this money. He wants to not hand out so much money, and they're all screaming. I wrote about a couple of times, and in the past I've written about it, that anti-Semitism envoy, special envoy in the State Department for anti-Semitism. Someone in our State Department who's supposed to stomp out anti-Semitism around the world, monitor it. He wants to cut that out of the, in his budget, he's got that as one of the things he's cutting out. And they're all screaming. And the thing is, the Jews could scream all they want, but it's the Congress people who will keep that there, I'll bet you. And there's nothing Trump can do about it.
Right.
Because they make up the budget.
You know,
I've been writing to my congressman about various Jewish issues. He probably knows what an anti-Semite I am now. I mean, he doesn't pay attention to me, but I don't think he's crazy about him either, because I'm in Texas and he doesn't seem like, he's not one of those East Coast or West Coast people. But what are you going to do? You know, they feel so that they have to go along with things.
Right. Well, and this idea of Jews as a parasite, as literally like a biological parasite, mm-hmm. you know, certainly in Western nations, what we're talking about here, the way they operate, the way they just literally suck all the resources from us and just tell us what to do, boss us around. We have people that are supposed to be representing average American interests just openly bowing down and literally doing anything the Jews say. That's what our government, I mean, the number one priority of our government seems like, what can we do more for the Jews? How much more money can we give Israel and the Jews? We exist to serve the Jews.
Loop, John, when I hear them say, and Trump has said it, that Israel is our greatest friend in the Middle East. Of course, they say in the Middle East, but you know, Israel's not our friend. Look at the wars they got us into and killed all our best male people and put us into trillions of dollars of debt. That's what they've done to us, let alone all the other stuff. But they all say Israel's our best friend, our best ally, our greatest ally. What kind of nonsense is that?
It's absurd. Again, that's what's so outrageous about this is it's so insulting to my intelligence as a critical thinker, to anyone who's just thinking objectively about this. Why are we giving all of our money to Jews? Why are we giving them unwavering, unlimited financial, diplomatic, military support? I mean, why? Why are we doing all these things?
How do we justify that Israel is in the Middle East? They say they're being attacked by all these their neighbors, but they were a very bad neighbor. You know, from the time they got down there, they, you know, got enough people and they were warring against them and killing them. And,
engaging in terrorism and murdering people. I mean, it's a very bloody history.
Right. And, very interesting how terrible it is. but they're there and we're supposed to defend them and talk about how courageous they are. To be there. They shouldn't be there. They never should have been there. I've never thought they should be there. They ought to get out of there and go somewhere else and we could have some peace in the world.
Right. Well, they wouldn't be able to establish, they wouldn't have been able to establish Israel. They wouldn't have been able to maintain the Jewish state of Israel for all these years were it not for white taxpayer money, white support, white, I mean, and it's interesting, the founding of Israel, we don't got to get into all these details, but from what I understand, like German engineers, like pretty much built up Israel essentially, you know, after the war was over with. Do you know anything about that? Have you read anything about that?
No, I'm not, I can't say that I'm any kind of expert on any of that, but I would believe it.
Okay, yeah, and I don't even want to get into it because I remember reading about it and I haven't really followed up on it for a long time and I don't want to do a Google search and try to find the info right now, but that's what I understand. But needless to say, my point is that without our money, essentially, and our support, our political support, our military support, Israel would not exist. It never would have came into fruition, into existence.
That's well, they would have been defeated if we hadn't helped them out. They right. would have been defeated in one of those early wars. I forget which one it was. You know, by Jordan or whoever was fighting them. They would have been defeated, but we couldn't allow them to be defeated, so we came to their rescue. And now we've been rescuing them ever since.
Right. And, so, of course, the fake Holocaust narrative is central in all of this and justifying all of the support and, you know, giving money to Jews and all their Holocaust museums and everything else. So,
Yeah, I want to say kinda one more thing before you move on about anti-Semitism, because I made a note of it. Because I was just reading today, Guillermo Rudolph has a new book out. The English translation is not out yet, but he's got about 100 pages of it on a PDF online that you can read. It's called The Chemistry of Auschwitz. It's kind of an update, expanded version of his earlier books about the chemistry of Auschwitz. And I read it today. I enjoy reading his stuff and I enjoy reading all those kind of detailed Holocaust technical versions stuff. But, he made a statement that I think I don't agree with. I don't agree with him in this kind of a thing. And, he wants to get along with the Jews. He doesn't want to be seen as an anti-Semite because, he's not against them. He knows how bad they are and what they do, but, we can't, you know, his philosophy is we can't attack them all just because of, some, but it's more than some. Anyway, he wrote this. The accusation of anti-Semitism is one of the worst ad hominem attacks possible. It is meant to disparage opponents by giving others the impression that they are morally so depraved that even listening to them is beyond acceptable behavior. Well, I think it's a big mistake for any of us to go along with the idea that anti-Semitism is the worst attack possible or the worst anything, you know, and that people who are anti-Semites are depraved. Now, he's saying that that's the view, but what we need to do is accept and explain and justify, or maybe that's not the right word, but, you know, make it clear why anti-Semitism exists and not accuse ourselves of being bad if we're called an anti-Semite or we don't like Jews. I think we should be able to not like Jews. Just like my whole philosophy now is that we should be able to say we want to be in control in our own countries and we want white people to be, historically white countries, we want white people to rule, white people to be the majority, white people to say how it's going to be. We don't want to give this over to non-white people. Well, they're destroying it and going to make it as bad as their own countries that they came from and wanted to get away from. Why do they come to our country if it's so bad they want to change it so much? It doesn't make, none of that makes any sense, that's for sure. And I think it's time that we stand up for ourselves. Just, even if we stand up as white people, let them call you racist because other people are standing up for their race or national origin and ethnic group and so on. They're sure doing it. It's only us who are told we're terrible if we do it. And we shouldn't go along with that. We need to stop going along with that right now. And I think that Guermars, you know, he writes like that. He's a great revisionist, but he writes like that about anti-Semitism in the Jews, and I don't think it helps.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this new book by Guermar. I have really not read many of his books, although I do have a couple of them. I mean, they're really long, they're very detailed, they're very scholarly.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, you know, I just haven't really taken the time to read every word of it. But I agree with you. I agree with you. And again, I don't know exactly what he wrote, but your general point is very well taken. And it's something that I've been saying for a while as well is, you know, you can call me an anti-Semite. You can call me a racist. And, you know, I'd say, yeah, so what? I mean, yeah, I kind of am actually. Like, I do believe in the biological reality of race. I am anti-Semitic in the fact I recognize Jewish power and Jewish supremacy and how they wield it and what their agenda is. And here's why I can explain it. Here's a Jewish source to back up everything I'm saying. You know, I think we should just be embracing this and kind of rubbing it in their faces. And one person who I think has been doing that very, very well is Andrew England in the Daily Stormer. I think that the way they use, like, we're neo-Nazi white supremacists and just go over the top with it. I think that's been very effective. And it's funny, and it, you know, sort of destigmatizes these ideas to a certain extent, I think. It's kind of just a big joke. And when I talk to people in real life, that's kind of the angle that I take, is I kind of try to make a joke about it and laugh about it and just be over the top with it. And it seems to work. I mean, I don't know. That's my take on it anyways. I mean.
Well, I would hope it works. I know that's what he's doing. And because he thinks it'll work, he certainly got a lot of people reading his site. But whether it's actually working, I don't know. But I suppose there are a lot more people who are open to it, to all this, than there was before. I'm sure there is.
You kind of got to just joke about it in real life anyways. You kind of just have to.
But for me, being, an older person, what I think is the best is to say, is to insist and not give up on white people have their own interests. White people have interests. That's like what Kevin MacDonald, who's a contemporary of mine, Kevin MacDonald basically says so often, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it's totally.
We have interests and we have a right to have interests.
And it's a totally valid.
What we should say.
It's a totally valid and like objectively true thing. I mean, you know, I agree with you. It's such a basic observation to make, and yet people somehow think it's wrong. You know, again, going back to our weaponized history, I think that has a lot to do with it.
It's these left wingers who think it's wrong. I don't know. Other people might not be willing to make a statement, you know, in defense of it, but I don't know. They think it was wrong, but these left wingers are just getting horrible. They're gotten so bold and so offensive. And I wish they'd stop because it really turns me off. I'm getting sick of the whole scene and reading all this stuff. But it might backfire on them. I don't know. Hopefully
right.
It will. But it's pretty bad, isn't it? It's really ugly
it is.
Out there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we saw all throughout the election campaign, you know, the rhetoric was heating up, the violence was becoming more and more prevalent, Trump supporters are getting beat up and sucker punched and jumped, Trump's rallies, you know, there's vandalism, there's people sucker punching people, you know, damaging private property, damaging vehicles, look at the inauguration, I could go on. And yet the media, according to the Jewish media, it's the total opposite. And it's all the Trump supporters beating up all the poor innocent leftists. It's the total opposite. It's the
total years, and it's all the lying has just gotten to be the thing to do.
Right, and it's just a total inversion of what is actually happening in real life, and the World War II. And see, this is getting back to the whole World War II narrative. The main point that I try to make to people once I really get into this stuff is. Look, the whole story, the whole narrative is literally the exact opposite of what we've been led to believe. It wasn't Germany who was trying to wipe out all the Jews. They just wanted the Jews out of their country and out of Europe at some point. I mean, at least that's my understanding of it. They had no policy to systematically murder all these people. They just
recognized them out of their country. And yeah. Then when their country expanded to cover so much of Europe, then, you know, it was, as they say, occupied by Germany. So then they wanted the Jews out of all that area.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And you can say that that's wrong or evil or whatever, but that is what they wanted to do.
Well, they considered they were going to keep that. They were going to keep control of that, or they were going to get the French, say, to put in a government that they would be agreeable to, or they would be watching over it or something like that. So,
right.
Everybody would have that same idea about the Jews. And I love the thing that Adolf Hitler said to the Hungarian leader. I can usually think of his name, but right at the moment I'm not. So
Horthy? Horthy or something.
Horthy. Right. Good for you, John. You got those names down good. And he was trying to convince Horthy that Horthy had to give up the Jews in Hungary because there was so many of them. They were such a problem. And, he said, you can either, put them in concentration camps like we've done or, turn them over to us and we'll do it. And, Horthy was worried about that for whatever reason. And he wasn't sure, but Adolf Hitler was telling him, you know, we did that and it has made such a difference in Germany and our nation. The people are so much happier. Everything works so much better. You know, he was talking about how the Jews were just so much troublemaking and everything was so much better since they got rid of their Jews. And that's the argument he was using. And, you know, I know he was sincere because it was. And just think about it, how much better it is if you don't have Jews around. You can have a few Jews. You know, but this organized Jewry they've tried to destroy everybody unless they can control them. They try to destroy every government that they can't control, or they try to, you know, change it, do this and do that. They're meddling in everybody's governments and nations. Meddling.
Right, right. Well, and yeah, that's kind of like the point that I try to make about the whole World War II narrative is that, look, Hitler and the National Socialists, they simply wanted the Jews out of Germany. They recognized them as this very destructive, subversive, and criminal element in their country. And that's, you know, easy to demonstrate. Look at what they're doing here in America today. It's basically just one big crime spree and one big extortion racket carried on by the Jews. It's outrageous what these people do. So that's all, you know, Hitler was about. He just recognized the Jews as being this very alien and subversive group of people that had to be, you know, their rights had to be taken away. They had to get out of the country. They had to be excluded. And you can say that that's right or wrong, but that's what he was trying to do. He was not trying to murder all these people. On the other hand, the Jews were openly talking about how they wanted to literally genocide the German people. And that is what happened during World War II. Mm-hmm. World War II was all about the destruction of national sovereignty, especially Germany. It was about, I mean, the total annihilation and subjugation of the German race. And they've been under the Jews' boot since then.
Right. You're right. You're right. And that's a terrible thing. And when you try to say that to people who are not ready for it, they just can't take it because, the Germans are the bad people.
And it's very, very sad to me. I mean, you know, really objectively looking at National Socialism, these were the most honorable, most righteous men and women of our race in our history, certainly in modern history. I don't know about, you know, of all time, but I mean, certainly they're up there. I mean, these were our best people,
our most brilliant
engineers.
They were the best Germans ever. They were wonderful, and it's so sad that they got cut off like they did, and so many of them were killed, and the rest of them had to run away, and they've been hunted down and so on. But that was a wonderful group of leadership there, and those were terrific ideas that Hitler had, and people were not being mistreated, and they were not being abused.
Even the Jews, weren't really being mistreated. Right. And this is another shocking thing to discover when you get into revisionism. If a German camp guard at one of these concentration camps mistreated a Jew or did something wrong, he was going to get, you know, in trouble with his superiors. You know, I mean, they didn't tolerate abuse of Jews. I mean, they were really by the book. And I mean, I don't even think there's really many like legitimate cases of German soldiers even committing, you know, sort of atrocities, quote unquote, against. It's all justified. I mean, this, everything they did, they were honorable people. They were really, truly honorable, righteous people.
The stories these Jews tell about their railroad trips, you know, are just a bunch of, you know, they're just making it up that they were in a railroad car for 5 days and they didn't have any water or any food and they didn't have, and they had one bucket for everybody to use to go to the bathroom and people were dying and this and that. That is not the way it was. It's not true. It didn't happen that way. I suppose someone would say to me, well, how do you know? Prove that it didn't happen that way. Well, I've written a lot about it in various places. And I can't think right off the bat, what I used and what I said and so on, but, I have addressed it. And a lot of this stuff is in these books these people write, and they show that it's, you know, you can show that they were, lying about just about everything and like they'll say 5 days. And then it turns out those trips that they're talking about were only 2 days, you know, and then you read some other of information and it shows that they had stopped for water and stopped to empty. They had more than one bucket, but stopped to empty those things out and to go to the somewhere and clean them out and so on. And they did, you know, they gave them food. They had at least bread, but I think they had more than that. They didn't treat them like this. They didn't do those things. But because everything is kind of thrown out, the German records are not available for the most part because they've destroyed them. But, it's hard to make people believe it.
Right. Yeah. And what's infuriating again, we kind of talked about this previously, is all these people making up these stories, whether it's these Hollywood producers or these people writing these memoirs and these, you know, quote unquote, you know, they'll have like the Anne Frank diary and all these other books that they sell and they write and they publish. They've made an entire industry out of this fake story, and these people are being financially rewarded by selling these fake stories to these gullible people. It's just, I mean, it's appalling. It truly is appalling once you see what's going on and once you can recognize it. And the thing that's so just amazing about it all is if you just read what they say, it's so incredible and so fantastical and just unbelievable. I mean, that we would just blindly accept what these Jews are telling us. It's the most ridiculous things. Like and Eric Hunt made a big point of this Irene Zisblatt.
I get angry at the white people for falling for all this. And, you know, I was calling them something, but easy marks. Whites have become such easy marks that, you know, we believe everything that's bad that's said about white people and our ancestors and our history and so on. We fall for it all. We don't. It's this Marxist type of thinking that's done it, that's changed and making, you know, there's not enough people who are resisting this left-wing takeover and thinking, and the way whites will go along with how bad they are and out of this white privilege stuff I read something just the other day that there was a group in some college that was having meetings talking about, I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't just white privilege. It was, discussing how bad white people were for the other people or whatever.
Right.
Discussion groups about this. What's wrong? But this is, what happened to us? We're killing ourselves.
We've been
laying down and saying, walk over me.
Yeah. we've been, you know, denuded. I mean, we've been just torn down and trashed, and we can't, you know, we gotta stand up and start being strong and bold like we used to be. I mean, I agree with you. It's just really shameful the way we allow ourselves to be treated by these Jews.
Leads us to Donald Trump, and I really think that for, you know, Donald Trump is not, Hitler. he's not, you know, somebody who's got everything, but he could, if he was, he would never get elected. He would never gotten anywhere. He never would have gotten the nomination if he had spoken up for whites, or if he had, you know, especially, or if he had criticized Jews or history or anything. So he's smart enough to know what he can't do. But he, what was I going to say? He's our only hope. He's the only thing that's turning things, starting to turn things in a different direction and attracting enough white people to follow him and say, yeah, we're going to stand up again. We're going to, you know, they're not, he's not talking to people to stand up against other races, but he is just saying, he's just making white people feel like they have a right to all the good things in life again. Mm-hmm. So, and so when people on our side attack Trump or say, oh, he's just a Jew lover and so on, I think that's such a mistake, because while he has all these Jews around and he's all for the, you know, to help black people and so on, he's still done more for whites, and he's making a bigger change in the overall narrative, or he could, he started to, you know, but they're fighting it like crazy.
Oh yeah.
He's the best thing. It's amazing he came along, and he's all we've got, and he's the best we've got. We should be standing behind him.
I completely agree with you. And the notes that you had sent over before we started the show, you actually highlighted an article I wrote. And this really kind of just is my main argument about Trump, is I am very inspired by Trump. I have high hopes for him. I think he's a very righteous person. I think he's honorable. I think he's truthful. I think he means what he says. He's not perfect. Again, like I agree with you there. He's definitely not perfect. He's not a racist, a racial realist. He's not anti-Semitic. He doesn't recognize the Jews as this subversive.
If he was, he wouldn't be president today.
Agreed. I agree with you. That's very true. That's very true. And the big story with Donald Trump, since he announced his candidacy, the big story, and certainly now that he's president, the big story is that he is allowing different ideas into the political discourse. He has altered the political discourse. And this is what the Jews were so concerned about with his campaign. I wrote an article back on May 11th of 2016, highlighting this. And this one article really just, I mean, I could just cite this every time Donald Trump comes up. This is the main problem that the Jews have with Trump, is he's unleashing the potential of white nationalism and the alt-right. And I think the alt-right has really sort of brilliantly seized the opportunity and made the most of it. And I think we're still seeing that.
They have to be careful. You know, I liked Trump as soon as he announced he was going to run for president, and he said that he started talking about the Mexicans crossing the border. And his boys, oh, wow.
It was great. It was great. I know. It was great.
I'm voting for now. And I've been for him, but I didn't write anything for a long time, because I thought I shouldn't write anything. It shouldn't be, you know, it's not good for him, for someone like me to be supporting him. Not that people who aren't part of our way of thinking even go to my website, hardly, you know, but still I thought, you know, some of us shouldn't be, some started writing about him right away, and I thought they shouldn't do that, because he did get in trouble with David Duke's support and things. David Duke's the only one anybody knows out there, so they always use David Duke. But he did get in trouble for that. But there came a time finally when I just had to write something, so I did a post on him, and I've been writing things, you know, ever since then. And it doesn't make any difference, because they, like I said, these people aren't looking at my site. But it's exciting, but I think we have to be careful that we don't try to get him to, think that he's identified with us, because that's just going to give him, that's going to make food for trouble, with his enemies.
Right, right, yeah. Well, and I don't think it's true either. I mean, Trump really is not, at least he, not overtly, certainly, he's not openly saying these things. He's not a white nationalist or anything like that. But, I mean, again, what he's saying and doing is good. And he's just such a different political actor, something that I don't think we've really seen, certainly not in my lifetime, but, I mean, I don't think ever really. I mean, he's really just this very, no. I mean, just a one-of-a-kind type person, you know?
Right.
To be, it's sort of like a moment in history. He's the guy that's going to step up and say these things and do these things and get us back on the right track. And I really do think that's what's going to happen. I think he really does care about America.
I wasn't worried. I thought, boy, he made it, when he won the election. I thought, oh, wow, this is just fantastic. And now we've got 4 years and probably 8 years. But now they're trying so hard to find something to impeach him on. I think he can fight it, but he does some things. I'm starting to worry about his tweeting. I think he should tone down some of his tweets. They never seem to get him into any trouble for the long run, but maybe he's just been lucky. I don't know, but I worry about some of the things he does. And right now, the whole picture seems to be confusing about in Washington, what's going on. It's just like chaos, kind of chaotic. But if it all works out that the Democrats are, and the media are shown to be, have been, breaking the law and so on, that would be good. But it doesn't seem like there's enough order. I wanted to see him just in an orderly way. Of course, I like order. Go about his program and carry it out. But instead, it's this kind of chaotic business going on now.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're certainly trying to do everything in their power to thwart him, to sabotage what he's trying to do, to prevent him from doing anything. I mean, look at this immigration issue. All these judges are saying it's unconstitutional for Donald Trump, the president of the United States, to enforce our immigration policies. It's basically what they're saying. It's so just ridiculous. I think he should be more forceful.
It's not easy for him to go against that, it seems.
I know.
What his team is working up, but, it seems like I would have thought that he could just plow through these judges, but it doesn't seem to be the case. And they're, like you said, they're holding everything up so that nothing can be done. They're just trying to stop everything.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And it's going to be a very bitter fight, and struggle this whole, certainly his first term, but probably even his second term. I don't know. I mean, it'd be great if we could get a lot of, sort of Trumpian type Republicans elected in the next, election campaign, at least in the House. And I think it's the Senate too. I guess it would be some senators up for election as well. I don't know. I mean, I don't see a whole lot of guys in Congress or, in the mainstream that are really backing Trump. There are certainly some, but I think there needs to be much more support for what he's trying to do. We have all these Republicans trying to sabotage him, like Lindsey Graham and John McCain, for example. These people
are
terrible. My God, who is electing these assholes? I don't know. I mean, it's just crazy to me.
Well, that's why, I don't know, they've got some super PACs, with pro-Trump people and so on. I hope they've got good plans and they're going to do some good things. But I don't think that the alt-right, if I use that to include the whole group here, can do much. And I think we can certainly support Trump and we can vote for him and we can talk to our Congress people. I know it's, there's a thought that, well, they're all, we don't want, we're not interested in that. They're not ever going to be on our side or blah, blah. But I think it's time for us to join in and not say I'm a white nationalist or something, but to just write to your congressman as often as you need to and say, I want you to vote for this. Oh, you know, Hattie Scott has it on his blog. I think it's good. He's got written on the side of his blog there, write your congressman and tell him you want such and such to happen. And write your congressman and tell him you want such and such to happen. Now, I think I agree with that. I think we should do that.
Right.
And just add one more voice to it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's really one of those things. We'll just have to kind of wait and see how things develop. I mean, generally speaking, I when I hear Trump speak, when he's at these rallies, I mean, I'm inspired by this guy. It's like, oh, finally, here's somebody. He's the real deal. He makes me proud to be an American again. You know.
Well, that's what happened to me too. I was too.
Well, and especially seeing, you know, the rallies and all these scumbags come out, it makes me want to fight. That's what kills me is we got Trump supporters out there getting beat up by these Antifa leftist clowns. That cannot be happening anymore. We got to be beating them up if they try to mess with us, which is kind of what happened this past weekend. It's sort of near where I'm at in Huntington Beach, California. There was a big Trump rally. And I guess there's some video. I didn't, you know, it's kind of hard to tell exactly what happened, but one of the Antifa guys ended up getting roughed up a little bit. And I guess the same thing happened out in Philadelphia and a couple other places. So it's like we're finally fighting back. But, you know, I was seeing Trump supporters, you know, good. And I don't know if you went to any rallies. I went to a few rallies and you show up at these rallies and it's all these good looking white people, these professional white people, you know. Families.
Yeah,
it's good. It's cool.
Them all, and I yeah. Say, but look at all those white people. Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful sight.
Right. It is. Yeah. It's like all these good looking white people with, you know, dressed nice with families and stuff. And, you know, we're getting beat up by these losers, by these total scumbags. Again, we cannot let this happen anymore. If they mess with us, we got to defend ourselves and put these people right into the cement. And hopefully that's going to start happening. But I mean, I'm just inspired by everything that's taking place. I think Trump has unleashed something that's much bigger than him. And, that's.
Well, he said that enough times, you know.
Right. It's bigger. Yeah, he has. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I think we should all keep pushing, you know, whatever we're doing online, whatever, even in real life as best you can. I know it's hard, but. You know, talk to people. Don't be afraid of your view. That's one thing that, I mean, I after everything I've been through professionally and relationship wise with friends and, you know, girlfriends and family and everything else, I just don't, I'm like not even phased anymore. I'm just like, you know what? This is somehow I got put down this path. There's no looking back now. And you know what? I'm right about this stuff. And if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. I'll admit it, but I mean, thus far, I think I got a pretty good understanding of what's going on and what the problems are. And I'm more than happy to talk about it, to elaborate on it, to, you know, cite various and legitimate sources to demonstrate everything I'm saying. So, I mean, you know, we just, I'd encourage everybody just to stay positive, stay confident, do your homework, be able to explain your positions, explain them well, and, you know, don't back down. And I think things are going to finally start going in our direction. I think they already are, but I think it's going to increase, especially if we're just bold with this. You know, we got to be bold and we got to stand up and say these things and say the Holocaust is fake history, which it certainly is. Before we move on, I want to talk about these fake anti-Semitic threats. One last quick question about the Holocaust. I get, maybe it's not a quick question, but it is a final question I have. Is there any work that needs to be done by the revisionists, or have they basically entirely debunked the entire narrative at this point?
Well, yeah, there's the deportations to the east from the Action Reinhardt camps, which they say, which people who want to say, you know, want to deny revisionist victories, that we haven't answered that. And that all these Jews were sent to one report and one telegram based on that report says, gives the numbers for, Jews being, deported to, sent to various, camps, Sobibor, my, well, some of them went to Majdanek, you know, Belzec and Treblinka mainly. And then there's no report that says where they went from there. Revisionists believe that they were, they went ahead with the deportation. See that, where, the border with, what was occupied, general government, Germany and Russia, is right there. And the train tracks change, you know, with their different size train tracks in Russia than there was, on the, German side. So the theory is that they stopped there and cleaned up and got the final, delousing and so on. And then they, went on into Russia and, well, that is not being accepted, of course, by the Holocausters. So, that hasn't, they say that hasn't been proven at all. There isn't much else that hasn't been though, but they of course don't accept any proof about anything. But, there's that. And then there's the stories about the Einsatzgruppen and just like, oh, Dershowitz, in that Dershowitz essay, he wrote that, he mentioned the Einsatzgruppen killings in, Ponari Woods and, Babi Yar, in Babi Yar and Ponari Woods. And, you know, I've had an article I never did post it. I have a lot of notes on Babi Yar. Babi Yar did not happen. There's so much evidence that it didn't happen and that these are just goofy stories that, well, something might have happened there. I don't know. But, this 70,000 and so on that were murdered at Babi Yar in this ravine and the story that they tell how that was done, it's just so unbelievable that people would just let themselves would just walk down there and let themselves be shot and walk into the pit and lay down. You know, that's what they were doing, but the Germans were ordering them to do it. So they did it. And then they were all shot, again and again. And,
it's ridiculous.
It is. It is
like all these stories.
But, as I was going to say, I told you once before that, Carlo Mantogno is coming out with the book on the Einsatzgruppen in, supposed to come out in December. So we'll see what he has in there, what he's been able to come up with. But finding out about what happened in Russia, you know, after they went across that border, went in there, it's very, very hard to do. How do you, you know, I mean, how do you do it? Because, the Soviet Union never cooperated at all and they were responsible for a lot of the Holocaust mythology and crazy stories. They, in fact, they came up with such crazy stories that they had to be changed and nobody would believe that kind of stuff that they came up with right at the end of the war.
Right.
So, no, I wouldn't say that it's all finished. I'm taking too long to answer this. I wouldn't say that everything's been written and everything's been done, that there's nothing more to say.
I guess a question then real quick. Do you think that the official Holocaust narrative, generally speaking, has been conclusively debunked at this point?
Well, I think so. Okay. I think so. I don't know, what others would, people who are trying to enforce it would say, but, it's certainly been debunked enough for me.
Right. Well, I think the main tenets of the Holocaust, a really good book about the Holocaust that I'd recommend people check out is called, I think it's called Dissecting the Holocaust, or Debating the Holocaust.
Oh, Debating.
Debating the Holocaust.
Dissecting is Rudolph's book.
Okay.
Debating, I don't know if it's Dissecting the Holocaust, but I think it is. Debating the Holocaust is Thomas
Dalton.
Dalton, yeah.
Very, very good book, and he's not like a major revisionist. He doesn't appear to be like an anti-Semite or a racist or anything like that. He's just like an objective historian from what I can tell. And I mean, the way he does it, you got to read the book because he goes over all of these, all the various aspects of the Holocaust. And I think it's pretty clear that the revisionist arguments are much more persuasive, much sound. I mean, they're sounder. They're just better arguments. They make more sense. And not only that, the main tenets of the Holocaust, what does it revolve around? It's 6 million, the number 6 million. It's the Nazis had a state sanctioned policy and a plan to do this, and they implemented it. And the third pillar is the gas chambers, right? Those three pillars, in my view, have been conclusively and scientifically debunked. There's no more debating it. We know for a fact this is a lie. This is a false, fake narrative of history that is weaponized and used specifically by Jews to advance their racial interests against our own. And as I argued earlier, it literally acts as a weapon to discredit the very notion of white racial identity. So it's a big problem that we're dealing with. We can't avoid it. We have to confront it. And I think you would probably agree with me, it sounds like.
Yeah, I do, and I'm glad you're on board for continuing to talk about the Holocaust and knowing how important it is, because not everybody feels that way.
Right. What's interesting is that not everybody that feels that way that are in the pro-white movement, they don't want to talk about this even.
Well, they don't want to study it. They don't know anything about it. Most of them have not educated themselves about it. Excuse me.
You're right.
They haven't, and they don't want to. They don't find it interesting. And they even talk about how boring books by when they get into the technical aspects and so on, how boring these books are and who would ever want to read something like this. And I understand I skip over in those books. I skip over a lot of stuff too, because I'm not a scientist and I don't, but a lot of it is, just talking about the, you know, how much of this they had and how much of that they had, you know, where they had the resources and so on. So it's important. But these people don't want, so they say, well, I don't need to read about it. I don't believe in it just on face value. I know it's fake. It's not true. But they can't then, expose any of it very well. I guess all I was going to say was the reason they say that is because they don't want to bother reading it.
Yeah. And it's sad too, because it's not that difficult to, you know, take a couple hours and research the Holocaust or watch a couple videos and come to the realization that the whole thing is a big hoax, a big fraud. And I mean, if you just like educate yourself on some basic talking points, you could be very effective. You don't have to be an expert on the Holocaust. What kills me, I'm not critical of white activists, pro-white people that don't deal with the Holocaust. What I am critical of is when they cave in and accept the fake Jewish narrative. When they cave in and accept it or go along with it in any way, or just like back down and go on the defensive. Oh no, I'm sorry, I don't deny the Holocaust, which I guess is pretty much the same thing, you know, essentially agreeing with or accepting the fake narrative. They could just say, hey, look, you know, there's people that dispute it. I don't know. I don't care. I'm dealing with white issues here and now. And bam, leave it at that. But it's when they go along with the narrative. And there's a good example of David Duke doing this on CNN. And I mean, I respect David Duke. I think he's done a lot of good work. I think, you know, I generally agree with him on a lot of this stuff. He was on CNN and they asked him about the Holocaust. He had a huge opportunity to say something very bold and very powerful. And what did he do? He said, oh, well, you know, I go along with he basically accepted the official narrative. And it was just, so, it's like, David, come on, man. Like, what are you doing?
I saw him on that show with that Smirnoff Graph guy or whatever, on CNN. That was,
on CNN for sure. I can't remember exactly who it was.
Whatever his name is.
It was very disappointing.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. I can understand. They think, well, they're on national TV and they might be getting some sympathy from some people. And if they say that, because this guy was saying, Well, come on now. You know, did the Holocaust happen or not? Come on. Did the Holocaust happen or not? And he was hemming and hawing around trying to evade it. And finally he said something like, or do you believe, you know, do you believe this or that? And he finally said,
He said something. I should have pulled up the video before we started the program. He said something like, well, yeah, the Holocaust was terrible, but didn't you know the Bolsheviks, they murdered all these other people. And I mean, it's not as if he just, you know, totally failed on it, but I mean, he could have simply said, you know, look, there's people that question it. I don't know. I don't really get into these issues. I think that people should be allowed to question and do research into any topic, you know, including the Holocaust. And I don't really, it's not my thing, but I will tell you about how the Jewish Bolsheviks murdered millions of people in Europe. And this is very easy to demonstrate and go on with that. Anyways, I mean, I don't know. That's just my take on it. I don't want to, you know, I can't sit here and, you know, tell anybody what to do, but I think that there are better ways to deal with this, especially for those that are pro-white, that are, you know, high profile, that they don't have to, you know, come out and be a full-on Holocaust denier. But I think they could handle the issue and address it in a much more effective way that would be beneficial to, more beneficial to the pro-white movement. So, yeah, that's my take on it. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, it seems like a lot of people, you know, it's just such, again, it's just such a taboo subject. You know, people don't want to.
Yeah.
Don't want to get associated with it.
Did you want to say a few things about this, bomb threat guy from Israel?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I just have a couple of comments, about him. What would you say? You start.
Well, it's been interesting the way that, it's been reported on. Cause I mean, I was following it in the news, reading all the Jewish, media outlets about it. I wrote a story about how they formed like a national council to demand more money from the government and to work with law enforcement people to protect Jewish institutions, et cetera. And I mean, you always in the back of your mind, you're always wondering, is this real? Is this a hoax? Is some Jew doing this? Which 9 times out of 10, it seems to be.
I mean, it is.
It's always a Jew.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Rabbi, what you doing? There's that meme that you can find that is just, I mean, it's so true. it's funny.
I wrote at the end of this, it's at this, in this Alan Dershowitz, that essay I responded to. I just stuck in at the end there that, you know, real anti-Semites don't paint swastikas, don't go around painting swastikas, because, you know, I have never done that, and I'm a real anti-Semite. You've never done it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to, and,
it's just stupid. It's silly. It's like absurd.
So if you see, and they don't, call in bomb threats either. You know, we've got a whole different, agenda that we're carrying out, not stuff like that. So if you hear about or see that, you know, they're talking about Nazi graffiti or swastika graffiti or bomb threats, you know that it's not anti-Semites at all. It's either pranksters or false flaggers. I should have added something else to that, like, or just Jews.
Jews, yeah, there you go. Just keep it simple. It's some filthy lying Jew up to it. Well, so that's kind of what I was following, is how they're using this, of course, like any event, to advance their tyranny and advance their parasitism. Their, you know, the way they just extort us for all this money anytime, you know, someone does something quote unquote anti-Semitic.
That I was noticing was that, They're trying, they don't know how to handle this teenager. He's 19, but they like to call him a teenager. This Israeli Jew, Israeli American Jew, because if they still want to call this a hate crime, you know, this is anti, and they want to call it anti-Semitic. This anti-Semitic, hate crime, or at least what's most important is that it's anti-Semitic with these bomb threats. Because they're trying to make Jews suffer or upset Jews, whatever. So they don't know how to handle it, because he's Jewish, and how is a Jew going to be anti-Semitic to other Jews? And we don't know what his motivation is. They're trying to hide that you know, an honest questioning of him about why he did it. Was he paid to do it, or was he or was he trying to make juice? Was he trying to make Trump look bad and Trump supporters look bad, because that's what everybody was taking from it?
Right. You know, what I've seen is they're trying to portray this young man as being, you know, mentally disturbed or something.
Yeah, they're adding that. He's got a mental problem because he's got this brain tumor, which is benign. It doesn't seem to be hurting him any, but they say it might affect his judgment. But his father was involved in it. He couldn't be doing that all for a year, at least longer, without his father knowing what he was up to.
That seems pretty clear that this guy's father did know what the son was up to and may have been helping him or facilitating it in some way. And also another point that you raise in the outline here, it seems like the Israeli authorities knew about it but weren't doing anything about it. So nothing was done until the FBI got involved.
That's right. That's another thing that they knew, but they were saying that they knew about it for at least a month. But they didn't tell the world that it was this Jew who was doing it. So all these attacks on Trump continued and the bad, you know, the bad, vibes he was creating they weren't going to do anything about it, because I think it's all part of the scheme to make whites look bad and to make Trump supporters look bad and to build up the idea that anti-Semitism is rising. That's what they kept writing in the news. Anti-Semitism is rising in the UK, rising in the United States, rising here. It's a serious, serious problem. Now, I don't know if it's connected to any particular program they have right now going for themselves, the Jews, or it's just the general thing that they do. But they're going to try to make out that this guy wanted to hurt Jews because there was something sick about him.
Right. They're having a very difficult time with this one. And they're writing about this. They're saying, oh no, this totally, they're sad about this. They're sad that this guy turned out to be Jewish. They wanted it to be some white supremacist Trump supporter. Yeah. So, it's really just a total fiasco. And gosh, again, another thing about Trump is he really is just demonstrating for the whole world to see, anybody who's being objective, just how dishonest the media is.
Yeah, because he is able to stay quiet. You know, they are going after him. Oh, this is, you know, Trump supporters. Trump has put out this terrible atmosphere in the country. He didn't answer it. He didn't say, no, I haven't, or he didn't say anything. But he doesn't say, oh, I'm so sorry, or, oh, I'm going to talk to my supporters or something. Like Pence is ready to be guilty right away. I like Pence, okay, because he's been real loyal and everything. But he's ready to be guilty, and everybody's ready to be guilty, but not Trump. Trump is not ready to be guilty. And,
right. Trump's quiet. In charge, yeah.
So that's what's so great about him. You can't go and attack Jews, but you can not respond to their attacks.
They
want you to.
Do you remember just a few weeks ago, International Holocaust Remembrance Day, in the White House statement didn't even specifically mention the Jewish Holocaust?
And the
Jews were in an uproar. And Sean Spicer, I've been watching a lot of the press conferences, just the raw press conference, you know, daily press conferences with Spicer.
I watch some of them too.
Yeah, he's good. I like this guy. He got up there and just was like, this is so insulting that we would have, you know, all these Jews calling us anti-Semitic for this statement. Trump has the most, he loves Israel, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but he handled it very well and like totally turned it around on the Jewish journalists for even attempting to call him anti-Semitic. And Trump did that himself. Trump did that himself. Yeah, go ahead.
I was shocked that they put out the statement like that. I liked it, but I didn't think they would would do something like that. I don't
to,
know
to
why
call
it was
to call attention
way,
to themselves in that way.
That she came out and spoke about it. Whatever. All these non-Jewish people, although this one Jewish guy with the funny name, they say he wrote it. But then I was even more shocked when they was criticized and they wouldn't change it. I thought, wow. This guy's got some balls, you know, and I don't really know what his reasoning is for it.
Right, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it is a very controversial, you know, statement to make about the Holocaust. I mean, by not
on
specific
on Holocaust,
yeah, yeah, it was almost like poking them at
Jews.
Poking them in their eye about it, you know. I love it. It's good.
Yeah.
And you're right. And they didn't back down. They certainly didn't back down, which is
they did change it. Never did.
Which is, again, why Trump is so great, is because this guy is not going to back down.
So when people say, when whites say, oh, Trump is just a tool of the Jews, he's surrounded by Jews, you know, he's got all these Jews in his family, that can't be helped. You know, that's just part of the picture. He can't do anything about that. He doesn't have to hire all those Jews, but he's always hired Jews. So they do good work for him, I think. They're probably good employees. So, he's always done that, but this other stuff, he should get credit for not caving in, and he doesn't. And everybody else does, you know, John, in Washington. Everybody else does.
Everyone does, yeah. That's why Trump is such a breath of fresh air, is because he doesn't back down.
Nope.
And I think he is ultimately the one in charge. He's not the puppet of somebody else. He's the one that's calling the shots and is ultimately making all the decisions. And you know, one final thing, I interviewed Dr. McDonald a while back, a few months ago, and he brought up a point about Trump's relationship to Jews and his connection to Jews, which is, I mean, he does, there's no doubt he does have all sorts of Jews working for him and involved mm-hmm. with him. His family is all married to Jews. Well, not all of them.
I found out, John, I read something not long ago, and it came from like the Forward or something like that, or Haaretz, that Eric's wife is not Jewish. I read early on that she was, and I know that Don Jr.'s wife is half Jewish, but she wasn't really brought up that way. And she wears a cross around her neck. She doesn't think of herself as a Jew. But anyway, she does have Jewish blood. So it was like, but I was so happy to find out that Laura Trump is not Jewish, because she worked so hard in the campaign. And I got to like her. And she sure didn't seem Jewish.
I'll tell you what, she does not look Jewish. She does not seem Jewish. So I was shocked when I heard that she was. And yeah,
It was like she was 100% Jewish, but came from them having this, at their wedding at Mar-a-Lago. They had, it was only part of the ceremony. It wasn't the total ceremony, but they had a Jewish canopy thing. And I don't know why. It was never explained why, but still they said that, she wasn't Jewish at all.
Right. Yeah, well, what I was going to say was that McDonald brought up the fact that there was a report. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was from a Jewish source, from like the Jerusalem Post or some Israeli paper, I think, where they interviewed one of Trump's old advisors, some Jewish guy who was involved with him. And he argued that Trump used Jews to benefit him rather mm-hmm. than the other way around. Like, again, my point is that Trump is the one in charge, not some Jew, not Kushner, not George Soros or any of these other big globalists. Trump is the one making the decisions, calling the shots, formulating policy, and ultimately has the final say. And I think that's very clear, and I think that is probably the best assessment of the situation. Trump may have all these Jews around him, but he's the one ultimately in charge.
Yeah, and I think I agree that he hires them because he thinks they do a good job for him.
And they probably do. You know? Yeah,
they're
that's
smart,
the thing. Yeah,
they're good lawyers, and they're good, you know, at a lot of things. And you know,
and they got all these connections to everyone everywhere. So all these high profile people, so they can get their way all the time. So yeah,
he's not hung up on this kind of thing. But I kind of like Mnuchin.
Carolyn! Carolyn! What now? No, I'm kidding.
Mnuchin, when he's talked, and I've listened to him, he seems, of course, he's smart, and he seems like he's really understands what Donald Trump is trying to do, and he's going to do it. And so you have a lot of faith in him. So I don't mind him. And there's only him and another guy who seems like a real nice Jew at Veterans Affairs in Trump's cabinet. Most of the Jews are his personal aides and so on.
Or that envoy to Israel or the ambassador to Israel, that real hardline Zionist Jew guy.
Oh, that, he's the ambassador. Yeah, ambassador. Yeah.
I can't remember his name or something.
He's not a cabinet member. He's an Israeli ambassador, right. But I don't know.
You know what?
I
don't care though, really. I mean, yeah, it sucks that we have Jews in our country at all, certainly at the highest levels of government. But at the end of the day, you know, I like Trump. I trust Trump. I mean, maybe that's a bit naive, but you know, we'll see. I mean, I think he has a lot of potential.
Well, I've always trusted him too. You know, the only thing I hold against him now is that he's getting fat. He's gaining weight.
Is he really?
Yeah, I can tell. He's got to stop. He's got terrible eating habits. He's got to stop. he's probably all the stress and everything, but, he needs to discipline himself because I don't want to see him get fat. He's a lot fatter than when he said, you know, when he first decided to run, he lost, and his doctor said he lost 20 pounds or something like that. And he looked pretty darn good. I wish he'd get back to that because, he needs to look good and trim and all. And
right. I agree.
Really.
Donald Trump, okay. If you need a personal trainer, you can email me, john.robert.friend@gmail.com. If you need a health consultant, I can put you in touch with Carolyn.
I don't think he's interested in health. He's lucky.
I know.
You know, this Jew Mnuchin said that Trump has perfect genes. He said he's never worked with anybody who has the stamina that Trump does. He never gets tired. He never stops. And, the guy asked him what he attributed that to. And Mnuchin said he has perfect genes.
Trump is spoiled. Yeah.
Trump is spoiled because of his perfect genes.
Well, he definitely is a beast. I mean, the guy is just, he's a champ. He just gets it done. Mm-hmm. And he's very confident, rightly so. I really do love the guy.
Dude.
And, you know.
I can't understand those who talk against him, you know, and I think it's wrong because, we're lucky to have him, you know, and what if he didn't come along? What were we going to have?
Right. We have such a huge opportunity here to really use.
Yeah. Oh,
so, yeah. I mean, yeah, we have a huge opportunity before us to really use this, you know, use his campaign, use the way he's allowing our ideas to gain more traction, to gain more exposure. We should be taking advantage of this. We should be viewing this as an opportunity. And that's the way I look at it. I mean, I'm certainly not as active, you know, on my website as I used to be, but you know, I still like to do podcasts and write when I can.
I think we need to support him in every way. You reach a lot of people, John, but you might convince people to have a good attitude toward Trump who might fall for some of those other highly critical people. Story. So that's good. You can do that. But I think that we need to also think in terms of just supporting him behind the scenes as much as possible, because I don't know that our support, you know, people like us, does a whole lot for him, except with our own people. You know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Get involved, get motivated, write your congressman or senator and call him up. You know, that's something I need to start doing. I need to just take like pick one day a week and just call them. Like, hey, this is the deal here. The Jews are destroying our country. And I used to do this. I used to, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I was calling my congressperson, who was Jewish, by the way, Susan Davis. I was calling them regularly. I actually ran into, some of her staffers. At like a what was it? It was like, it wasn't a farmer's market. It was like a little neighborhood event, you know, right by where I lived in San Diego. And I talked to him and started calling him up about all the wars and 9/11 and stuff. And, you know, I kind of stopped doing it, but it's something that everybody should be doing. I mean, not necessarily about those issues, yeah, but call him up and talk about immigration.
I think we should tell him, I want you to support Donald Trump's this or that, you know?
Right, exactly.
Donald Trump in this. I want you to support this bill, or I want you to kill this bill. I don't like this bill. I don't want you to support this bill. Things like that. Not basic things. To talk about the Jews, particularly if your congresswoman is a Jew. You know, I'm lucky now where I live in my town is a very pro-Trump town. I don't run into anybody who's not pro-Trump. I don't have to say, oh, I think this or that, because nowadays if I speak positively of Trump, the other people will say, yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I love Trump. And, you know, they're all pro-Trump here for the most part.
So, good.
One congressman and two senators, so that's not a lot of calling, but the congressman is most important.
Right. Yeah.
He's closest to us. You know, they're closest to us. They have to listen to their constituents more than the others do.
Well, Carolyn, you've motivated me. I'm gonna get on the horn tomorrow at some point and give my congressman a call and give him a piece of my mind. You know, basically, I think the main thing right now is immigration and refugees. No refugees, shut down immigration, get the illegals out. Very simple.
Yes, agreed. You know, I don't know if you watch the Gutfeld, the Five on Fox News. I just see pieces of it on the internet, on Fox News at the internet. But there's a guy on there I like, Eric Bolling. But he disappointed me the other day. He announced that he was pro-legal immigration, but against illegal immigration. I was so disappointed because I didn't think he would be. He's very big Trump supporter, but no, we need to stop immigration altogether. Here's another thing besides the anti-Semitism thing. I so detest the people saying we're a nation of immigrants. You know,
I know.
My grandparents were immigrants, so I guess I'm not supposed to say anything against immigrants, but it's different people. We were from, you know, the people coming in now, and they want to come in illegal too. I mean, if we had illegal immigration would be okay if it was like Trump is doing. He's putting a cap on how many can enter in a year. Now he's got it at 50,000. Even that's a lot, but if we could get them from better places, and he did want to get immigrants who had skills and who had something to offer this country. He was talking like that during the campaign, and he's still talking like that. So immigration is okay if you keep it really controlled. But, you know, these people who want to think that we want all the people who will come here because they'll just make us better and stronger. Just let them come in. That's so sickening.
It really is.
Fight against, you know, if somebody says we're a nation of immigrants, everybody shuts up or they nod their head yes or say, well, that's right. You know, they won't say, hey, wait a minute.
Now, the appropriate way to respond to that argument is saying, yes, we are a nation of immigrants, but we were a nation of white Christian immigrants from Europe.
Or even just to say we had immigrants who could assimilate easily because they are of the same culture. We don't even have to point out that they were white Christian. You get the idea. But we don't want immigrants from another culture. Then there's the argument of how they come here, then they want to change the whole country around to make it like their old country, to make them, you know, put themselves in charge. And what's it going to do? But you can't talk reason, as we've already pointed out. It's not about reason. It's about actually political philosophies and taking over white countries.
Yep. It's true.
It's hard to know why they want to do that. Not all of them do. Some of them want to come here because they know it's better here. And they have a hard time going against their own people when it comes to voting and so on. Another one I really love is Jeff Sessions.
Right, right.
They're going after him too. You know, they're doing their best. But we'll see. You know, you probably want to end the show.
Yeah, we should. We're just about 2 hours in, and I know it's getting late you're at. Yeah, yeah. But it's been a good conversation. One thing I want to say just really quickly, you were mentioning how we're in such a, you know, really shameful state of affairs. Our race is at a very low point, and, you know, we really need to get it together here. And I will say this, we will never get it together until we stand up to the Jews and, you know, denounce and renounce their fake historical narratives, reject their Marxist anti-white ideas, and just tell them to piss off. I mean, we gotta do it. It's the only way we can get out of this. They are the ones behind all of this, and it's very easy to demonstrate, and we gotta man up and say it and do it. And until we do, we're gonna continue on this very shameful path we're already on. Carolyn, I'm so glad that you were able to come on the program tonight. I really appreciate it. Please let us know any concluding remarks you have, and please plug your website and tell us how we can support your work.
Oh yeah, thanks, John. I don't have any concluding remarks, but my websites are carolynyeager.net, and that's my main website. And then I also have the website ellieweaseltattoo.com, which a lot of people are familiar with. But there's another website that I participate in and share with some others that I do work on that I think is very good, and I would like more people to be aware of it and to visit there. Although it doesn't get new content very often, it's true, but it is the one for January27.org, JAN27.org, that was put up to correspond with the Jewish Holocaust Remembrance Day on January 27th. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there. So that's those three.
Thank you. Very good.
I enjoyed talking with you, John, very much.
Yes. Thank you so much, Caroline. We'll have to do this again, and maybe we can get into some of the specifics about the Holocaust. We can do just a show just dedicated to, like, all these ridiculous stories they tell us and, you know, kind of get more into it. Because we were kind of just speaking in more broad terms today, but
right,
we'll have to do this again. And I do really appreciate it. I've been a fan of your work for a long time, so it's great to finally have you on the program and talk about these things. So thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We will talk to you all very soon. Good night, Carolyn.
Good night, John.